Hello, hello, and welcome to the CBETS podcast. We're your hosts, Regina Piltz.
And Ruben Cervantes.
And if you've been following us the past couple of weeks, we've been doing a really sweet series on the hope, our
the
hope
one
in Christ,
hope. Yes.
The one, capital O, and the return of Christ and our heavenly, well, actually earthly, forever in him.
Our home.
Rules.
Yeah.
But today we have a really sweet special guest, Missy Edwards. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. So, I mean, most people know a little bit about you and who you are, but just give us a snippet of your life over the past 10, 20 years.
Yeah, so I've been at the International House of Prayer, where we've been doing the 24 hours, 7 days a week, and been leading worship daily, near daily, for many, many, many years, and was one of the first interns. The last couple of years, I've been in and out of Jerusalem, so I've been in a little different setting, but I've been back here in the prayer room, working, discipling on leadership teams, that kind of thing.
That's so
teaching.
Cool.
Yeah, and what many people may not know about you is you actually were, I mean, you've been very pioneer-esque in taking MikeBickle.org into the phase that we are now, of
yes.
course, with the help of Elijah Choi now and his team, but you've been really involved in that.
Yes. No, I've been very involved in Mike Bickle products. In fact, I think it was about, 12 years ago that I first said, we need to build a website. We need to capture his library mm-hmm. and get it online, get it to the masses, get it to where people can access it. And they're like, you're just a singer. Like, why do you care about this? But I'm more of a message person even than I am a singer.
Yeah.
And so I was like, we're going to make this happen.
Yeah.
We need to capture live. We're actually redoing his whole website currently.
Right.
With Benji and Elijah.
Yeah,
and
which is so exciting. So cool. I'm excited about what they're coming out with. And of course, your leadership in that has been amazing. But I just always like to share that because most people who know you, you know, of course, we're kind of a niche of the body of Christ, which is awesome. This is our stewardship. But those that do know you as a prophetic singer, mm-hmm. or they might think of you as a worship leader,
right.
or whatever. But what I love is that goes deeper. You know, one of the first experiences I had, actually the first experience I had with hearing you, it was 2007, and it was you as a preacher.
Wow.
Because you preached. You know, and I was not familiar with IHOP at the time. I came here because a lot of people under my care came to the One Thing conference, and it was weird language, like magnificent obsession and bridegroom. Like, it just
what?
Was weird, you know?
It is weird.
And so I came in to check on, I'm like, is this, like, safe, you know? And then you preached, you know, and I think Justin Rizzo led worship or something. But so I experienced you as a preacher.
It's interesting. Yeah, I still don't preach that much. I love message.
Yeah.
Like, I live in the message, and I mean, Mike's one of my favorite teacher of all time.
Awesome.
He's changed my life, my worldview, my view of God,
everything.
My view of myself, my view of purpose and meaning and what's going on in the earth. He's just saying things that so many people aren't saying.
Yeah.
And it's all the Bible.
Right. Yeah. No, I love it. One of my favorite memories with my sister is actually when we used to listen to your to a number of your albums. And it'll be like during the summertime, you know, everyone's got their windows wound down. They're driving through the city thinking they're super cool. So there's me and my sister driving, windows down. You would dwell between the cherubim. So we would just have yours blasting.
That's
like,
awesome.
Who can sing this faster, me or you? Amazing. And then, like, you won't relent. And the first time I heard that, I was like, you wrote a letter till you had it all. We're like, you wrote a letter? Wait, this isn't
That's
right.
Awesome.
And then we like, take
awesome.
The, oh, you won't relent. That makes more sense. Got it.
That's so good.
That's hilarious. Like, I've never heard that one.
Take it with you. But even your CDs, like, transformed our lives. Like, these, again, the words, the expressions, you're like, wait, what does this mean? Where is this in the Bible? In it? It caused our,
right.
caused our hearts to remember.
It's when skill, right? Skillful music, skillful song meets the message that's transformative,
mm-hmm.
that can have an impact in a soul that you don't forget it, right? And it kind of stays alive every time you sing it. It's kind of like it remanifests itself. That the first time you experience that truth, it kind of comes on you again, and you relish in those moments.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what I love about what's, you know, we've reached for here at the International House of Prayer, you know, is really reaching for songs that express the message, and not just that are reaching for, like, popularity or reaching for relevance. Because what you find with timeless, you know, music, timeless things is is that they don't usually have the quality that makes them hits or popular music. You know, timeless music is the kind that 10 years later, we're still singing it.
Oh, for real.
And it's not everyone singing it, but it's those that are marked by the same issues, the same, you know,
revelation
yeah. and encounters. That it's like, oh my gosh, that is so true. Mm-hmm. Like the other day, it was Jonas Park was singing a song that he wrote a long time ago. Yeah. You know, to know your nearness as in the garden.
Yeah, I love
I was
that
like,
song.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I melted.
Yeah, I've always been like, speak and sing to your tribe. If your tribe is 10 people, it's 10 people. If it's 10,000 people, it's 10,000 people. Like, yeah. this fear is not my business.
Right.
That's
right.
God's business.
Right.
But if you're authentic and you sing and speak to your tribe, then you're going to find your niche. Yeah. You're going to find your lane.
Right.
And then stay in it and don't worry about numbers and, you know, popularity.
Yeah. Right.
No. I think that's such good insight. And I think the other thing that's been striking me recently is how a lot of the songbirds in this season, I mean, throughout every season of being a songbird, but it's all about the vulnerability of actually sharing the revelations that the Lord has given you. I think when I was younger, I was like, wow, they have these really cool phrases and oh, I just want to be able to write that. And so then you try and be creative in your own strength, but then you realize actually it was out of a sweet moment and a sweet revelation of yeah. the Lord. And then the vulnerability of giving that as a gift to the world is just beyond anything. Like it's kind of giving your heart away,
it
but
is.
Causing so many
scary.
People to go
yeah.
into the deeper revelation of the Lord.
Well, and then you're dealing with all the accusations. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, you know, does my team think this is okay? You know, like right. you're, there's all, you know, it's courageous to yeah. advance things like this. Well, I want to go back to what you said earlier when we were talking about the past, you know, what you've been doing, but you mentioned you were in Jerusalem for
yeah.
a couple of years. Now
yeah.
I'm so glad you're back. I remember when, you know, I'm like, hey, is Misty coming back? Kind of miss her around here. It's kind of weird. But you know, I'm sure the Lord, you know, it was a powerful time for you. And so I want to just hear, because we've been on this series on the One Hope, right?
Yes.
From Ephesians 4, just realizing like, though there's chaos out there right now, especially in America, we're seeing so much instability and, you know, like our systems are being shaken, our foundation systems are being questioned. You know, it seems like there's no safety anymore in our political alliances, and there's no security in what we thought was once secure. And but what we've gone back to is, you know, Ephesians 4, Paul says, you know, hey, here's something unshakable. We have this one hope.
Yes.
No matter who you are, what time period you are in, it belongs to your calling. One hope. And of course, we know that that is you know, the consummate moment when he returns and he's going to establish all, you know, Titus calls it our blessed hope, right? When Jesus returns, how did your time in Jerusalem connect you to what we know it to be the new Jerusalem?
Yeah.
I mean, what was that experience like?
It was amazing. And it totally took me by surprise, actually. I didn't even intend to stay there when I went. It was all, I felt like I got hijacked by God. But being in the city of Jerusalem, the only way I know how to describe it is it makes that hope very earthy. Mm. And it's not even just the sentimental sights, which I liked seeing, and I liked going around all of Israel and seeing where Jesus walked and all that. When I'm walking down the streets of Jerusalem, which I spent hours just walking, talking to people, Jerusalem to me feels like a revolution, like a young man. Like there is a sound in the rocks, in the stones
wow.
themselves are pulsing with a coming revolution. It's almost like the New Jerusalem is hovering above it already.
Yeah.
Like it's really, really earthy.
Wow.
And there is a real man, a Jewish man, a young man leading a revolution. And it's going to be in that actual city with that actual army.
Mm-hmm.
On the flesh. I mean,
wow.
It's like, it's very, it just made it very, very earthy.
Yeah.
And less ethereal and less kind of just pie in the sky and, mm-hmm. you know, heavenly.
Yeah.
It made it like, whoa, this is tangible. I can touch
right.
it. I would just touch the rocks and like the ground and be like, this is real. Like
yeah.
he's totally. Not only has he been here, he's coming back here.
Yeah.
Forever. This is going to be the center of the universe is
wow.
going to be Jerusalem. Forever. Like for billions and billions. I'm talking about the universe.
Right.
Wow.
And
yeah.
as the increase of his government goes to the galaxies of the galaxies, who knows where this thing
yeah.
is going. Jerusalem's going to remain the apple of his eye, the very center, the lens from which he sees everything through.
Yeah.
And the fact that they don't love him.
Right.
They don't want him. They still to this day, many, many of them write him off. And, you know, the young people of Jerusalem, are a lot of them are very, very secular. Like, they're not even spiritual, like what you would think about, you know, a religious Jewish person. It's very, Tel Aviv is extremely secular. It's the homosexual capital of the whole Middle East. So there's a, which is actually better, because it opens their heart to a certain spirituality that if they had an ultra religious or ultra orthodox background, they would be more hostile.
Right.
So I found that very interesting as well.
That is interesting.
That the young people have a way more open mind.
Gosh.
The ones I interacted with anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the third thing was just the music. I mean, there's just street players playing in the shuk. Just music everywhere. And it's like, wow.
Wow.
And there's a certain energy and just vibrancy about that city that I absolutely love.
It's alive.
It's alive. But it as far as what it did to my hope is I realized this is actually going to happen on this rock, on this planet.
Right.
Come on. It's crazy. I remember the first time I went to Jerusalem, me and my mom looked at each other and we're like, wow, doesn't it feel like you're suddenly home? Like, yes, there was a peace that rested on our hearts. We're like, oh, this is it.
Yeah.
We could stay here forever.
You know, I've never had the privilege to go. I was about to go, but COVID, you know, it shut down the seabeds. And those of you that are listening that were expecting to go with us, hopefully you've already received an email notification if you've already set your deposit. But we've had to cancel it again, just given the COVID restrictions and the shutdown of the nation. But anyway, I was so looking forward to
experience. But it's okay, because we're going to be there forever.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's okay.
No, but this is kind of maybe selfish to say, but I would like to see it before it's glorified.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, I think about the inverse of what Haggai experienced, you know, the people who had seen it in its glory and then saw it in its rubble, they grieved, they wept over the rocks. I kind of want to be one who saw it before it was the king came and back and restored it, so I can be like, no, you got, let me tell you what it was like.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
I mean, that's such a sweet gift.
But there is a power in that, because the people that live there, I mean, they don't have the hope. The majority of them, they don't even know what we're talking about right now. And they think we're crazy for saying it. So to see that, and to see that he's going to not only transform that land, he's going to transform those hearts, is going to be a shock.
Right.
I mean, when it says that they're weeping as for a firstborn, they're going to literally be like, it was you all along. Like, they're looking for a Messiah.
Yeah.
They're looking for a political leader to come and lead Israel and dominate the world. And they're literally looking for this man.
Yeah.
And when they realize it's Yeshua and it's been him this whole time.
Yeah.
I mean, that to see that before and after is actually very powerful, because it's a trophy of his grace and the power of his determination and his love and his ability to do what he said he was going to do without violating the free will at all.
Crazy.
I mean, it's
that's
shocking.
Powerful. Mm-hmm. No, that's it. So, okay, so most of us who go to Israel would go, you know, for a week, 2 weeks, maybe a month. You were there for 2 years.
I mean, in and out, to be fair.
Yeah.
I had to leave quite often, but yes.
Oh, because of the,
the visas.
Yeah, but so tell me what it was like, though, to be there for a sustained period. I mean,
it was such a gift. I mean, I cannot explain it. And I didn't do the bus tours, which I think those are fine.
Yeah.
It's good to at least get one round of just seeing everything. I was right in the heart of Jerusalem, right above the outdoor shopping market, the Shuk.
Oh, wow.
And right above several different restaurants. They would be out there till 2 or 3 in the morning, bunch of young people. And I would just walk and talk to people. That's a lot of what I did. The prayer rooms there are quite small. One of them, there's 4 different ones in Jerusalem, at least there were when I was there. I think one of them shut down since I've been there, but they're quite small. But the people that are running them and holding the line are just, I mean, they're full on in it to the end.
Yeah.
The real deal.
You have to be if you're in that context.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy as far as ministry life and the prayer room goes. That's not easy. Jerusalem's not an easy place to be for that kind of thing. Spiritually, it is, but not financially. And it's just a struggle. But yeah. So for me, I always tell people, if you're going to go, if you really want to experience Israel, go do the tour thing. And then if you have the chance, find some locals and live with them, go into the heart of Jerusalem, go to the heart of Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is very different than Jerusalem, and talk to people.
Yeah.
And like know the locals. Wow. That's just kind of what I would suggest.
And they're just multilingual. So you just, you were able to speak English and get by?
For the most part. In Jerusalem, pretty much, because there's people from everywhere.
Yeah.
And most young people would speak English.
I see.
Which I realize is very arrogant of me to come in and just expect them all to speak English to me.
You expect the rest of the world to speak English.
Yeah, I always was very, just like, oh, I'm so embarrassed that I don't know any Hebrew. Hebrew is a difficult language.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, but the older ones wouldn't so much. They would speak more Hebrew. Okay. And if you get out of Jerusalem and you get into the smaller areas, it's harder. It does get harder.
I see.
Language-wise.
So, wow, so it became real to you. It's not just the hope of a salvific hope, you know, like, well, we're going to be, well, it, like we tend to think about salvation. Sometimes it's just kind of like an emotional, spiritual, souls thing. But you saw the physicality of
that's
our hope.
What touched me was it's tangible. It's not just ethereal. Like, it's feet on the ground.
Right.
Yeah.
It's tangible.
In person.
When he said in Ezekiel, this is the place of my throne. This is the place of the soles of my feet where I will dwell forever.
Isn't that crazy?
Like, the soles of his actual earthly feet. We're talking about a real man with real feet. Who happens to be the God of the universe.
And there's hair on those toes.
Yeah, with hairy toes.
You know what I mean? Oh,
man. Probably has the clip of toenails and everything.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, nice. He's a real man, and that really strikes you.
Yeah.
It really struck me while I was there.
So I hear you. It's the physicality of the location. Like, there's a real place that's the center of the universe, the apple of his eye from Jerusalem, and it's the physicality of our God.
Yes.
That he's coming as a man, returning just as he ascended. You know, the Bible says he will descend again. Just as he ascended. And so he ascends as a man, of course, with a glorified body. He descends with a physical body on the earth. That's, man, I got to admit, I talk about it. I do believe it, but I talk about it and it's hard for me to actually picture it.
Oh, yeah. And you feel stupid. Well, you might not, but.
I do. No, I do.
Sometimes I'm like, this is bigger than any Marvel comic that was ever written about. Like, this is crazy that we believe this.
Right.
I mean, that's like saying Elvis is going to come back.
Right.
It's like that crazy to people who don't have faith.
Right. Yeah.
But when I was there, my faith grew instead of decreasing.
Yeah. So in what ways would you say that your number of years here in the prayer room before you even went to Jerusalem impacted that hope?
Massively.
Because, you know, you can get saved and you can go to Jerusalem, but not having any of the knowledge of the Bible probably may not do anything for you if you're in the city. So what ways did...
Massively.
Yeah.
After, at that point, I had been doing IHOP for 18 years, you know, praying for Israel multiple times a week. Mm. And you fall in love with who you pray for. And so in praying these 150 chapters that we've been studying in CBETS, that's all Jerusalem and Israel-centric.
Yeah.
I mean, nearly all of them are. Yeah. It's like, it comes alive. And so I think studying the end times and praying for Israel and talking to the man himself through the Spirit, having heart-to-heart conversation with him, made me fall in love with what he loves. And that's Jerusalem.
Right.
That's Israel. And so it massively affected, because otherwise it's hard to be there. Like, it's not an easy place to live. Mm. I'm an outsider. I don't speak Hebrew. You know, there's so many reasons why it would be difficult to be there. But my heart was so full, but it was because of the years of the prayer room and the Bible.
That's awesome.
And talking straight to him, like literally talking to him about his heart and about his people and about his book.
Yeah. I mean, these always seem such simple, easy tips that you're giving us. Just read the Bible. Just talk to the Lord. You know what? And it really is that simple.
It really is.
I think the difficult thing is continually putting the time in.
Yeah.
The 18 years of hard work that you sowed in to get those sweet revelations back to your heart. It's like, if you really aren't continuing in that conversation year after year after year, then it really does become stupid. It like does. Using your word of like, yeah, this whole revelation is stupid. Like, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
Right.
So the years of putting it in, it actually does make sense to your heart and to your soul.
I mean, faith really does come by hearing the word.
Yeah.
And it's like any relationship. When you stop talking, your heart grows cold.
Yeah.
And then you start doubting that other person. And do they love me? Are they real? Are they lying to me? Like,
yeah.
Were they a figment of my imagination? Right. Like, I haven't even seen them in 3 years or whatever. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's like any relationship.
It conversation. Requires, it requires conversation. That's so, again, I'm so struck by the physicality of our hope.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, our goal as the CBETS podcast and the Center for Biblical and End Time Studies in general is to empower all believers to understand, live, and share this message of the gospel, the complete gospel message, you know, what we call the forerunner message, that he not only came and had that climactic moment, the cross, where he proved his love by emptying himself, but he has a plan to return to this planet that he purchased with his blood. And he, as Psalm 2 says, you know, he's wants to, it's his inheritance and he wants it. And God the Father, you know, he's going to give it to the Son. And of course, we see the beautiful heart of Jesus in John 17, where he describes this. But one of the things that often escapes our hope is the fact that it's connected geographically to a city named Jerusalem. Like, you know, I always love how Daniel Lim says it, you know, because it's, you know, the geographic center is Jerusalem. He talks about these four ways of understanding our gospel. But Jerusalem being at the center of it, it often escapes us as Westerners. Yeah. You know, we often ignore it. We don't think about that is part of our hope.
Yeah.
You know, because we all want to escape the earth and, I guess, play harps in a cloud somewhere.
We don't even think it all the way through.
Yeah, that's right.
But
right.
The part of the hope is that we have all these promises that we've seen in these 150 chapters, many of them being in the Old Testament, which, you know, the Orthodox are studying. They actually have more faith in these chapters than most Christians have. But the thing is, if God keeps his promise to Jerusalem, then I have confidence he'll keep his promises to me. So that's another aspect of hope.
Yeah.
Like, either he's a liar or he's not.
Yeah, that's right. either it's real or it's not.
Yeah, and if he's a liar, then why am I in this thing to start with? So part of the hope is going, it's going to be tangible because you said it was going to be tangible.
Yeah.
Right. It's going to be in the flesh.
Believing.
So that's another aspect of
the
hope.
Well, you know, I think you hit something beautiful. The idea that if it's true, then it's all true.
Yeah.
I think that so often we kind of edit what truth really means because we're not either comfortable with mystery or we don't know how to interact with society who doesn't believe in certain kinds of things but allows us to believe in some ethereal things, you know? And I really, as you said that, I'm confronting my own, you know, functional atheism on some of the things that he says will happen. Like he said, he's going to shake everything that can be shaken. Do I believe that though?
You know,
you know, or is my gospel more centered on the comfort that I think I can retain if I'm faithful to him or something, you know?
Right.
And I think that really provokes out of all of us that if our hope really is in Christ, in him returning, in making his kingdom literally from a geographic center, not in the West, you know, then are we, if that really is our hope, then are we okay with what it means it's not, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
And I got to confess, I don't know that I know that yet. I know that like when I talk and when I write it down and when I say it publicly, I guess, but privately, I think it's really confrontational.
Yeah, it is. It is because he's not American. Like he's really not. Mm-hmm. And he's not what a modern Jewish person would be either, necessarily. Look at the Old Testament, the way he set up the priesthood, the sacrifices. I mean, so much of that is so offensive. And just, why did he have to die in the first place? And the whole cross thing. And just the whole story is like, you are not like my American friends and my own brain. Like, who are you?
Yeah.
Like, where are you coming from?
Yeah, for real. I think even what you said of like, do I truly believe this? I think there's even a question beyond that. I was like, okay, I fully believe it, but now I actually need to pray and to help usher it in. You know what I mean? It's like now I need to actually have your heart of loving what you said is going to happen. Do I like that everything's going to be shaken? Probably not. But I need my heart to be so flipped that I actually want everything to be shaken because he says it's going to be shaken.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, that's exactly right. Actually, I wrote a song. I haven't released it because it was kind of just
it to us, Ruben.
No. But it was that was the revelation. It was kind of like the Second Chronicles 7, right? Like, if my people who are called by my name turn, whatever. So I took that, and it's like, what happens when you repent? You agree with God. Mm-hmm. So, and I remember in that time I was writing that song, which I haven't released, and I don't know if I ever will, but the point is that the outcome was, so come and shake the earth. Mm-hmm. It's agreement mm-hmm. with the thing that's most disruptive to me and my former self. If I'm repenting, then I agree. Yeah. Do it then. You know, even purify your church.
Yeah.
Would, you know, fill us with your glory, Lord of hosts, you know, that concept. Yeah. And then agreeing, you're going to shake it all. And we're all going to stand and, you know, worship you. We're going to marvel at you. You know, and this is the future of your people, that yes. we would worship and marvel and quake at your might and right. see you as beautiful and glorious, not because you did it our way, but because you shook everything yeah. up. And so I remember, you know, when I wrote that, I asked Mike for his opinion just because, you know, I was just curious, you know, because I don't write in English very often. And then I don't know if I was saying it right. And he's like, no, this is true, but add a little bit of mercy in there, you know, like in your wrath, remember mercy or something. And I'm like, oh, this is hard. And that's probably why I didn't release it. I didn't know what to, you know, like, that's such a heavy thing. But I think that as we see the polarization increase in our world, you know, where light becomes brighter and darkness becomes darker, I think we're going to see this emergence of the kind of repentance that abandons our own vision for what, you know, a utopian society or a quality of life looks like and embraces the eternal vision to see Christ exalted once and for all, starting now.
Yes.
You know, rather than, well, we kind of like that idea when you're ready, but I'm going to keep building my little kingdom thing, you know. And
not only that, he would be exalted. I mean, that's the ultimate. But that we would all become a part of the kingdom of the Son of the Father's love. That the society that he's creating and he's been creating for thousands of years by creating these meek, we go from these egocentric babies when we're born, like, feed me, take care of me, me, to by the time we die, hopefully being formed into the image of a slain lamb, sacrificial, pouring our lives out first for our children, then for our grandchildren, and then for society, whatever the way the Lord allows us to, that he's creating this meek society that is actually the euphoric society that we all dream of. But it's actually the pride of man that creates the oppression and the poverty and the sickness and the slavery and all the things that the earth has gone through. The more we get disillusioned with the illusion, the more we say, shake everything that can be shaken.
Right.
Like, disillusionment is a gift. That's a negative word, but it actually is a gift. Who wants to be illusioned? I don't want to buy a lie. I don't want to drink the Kool-Aid.
Right. Yeah.
Like, this is not good. There is no peace until he comes back.
Right.
And so I think the more we see the truth through these 150 chapters, the more we see the future and how good that society is going to be. Mm-hmm. We're like, shake everything.
Yeah.
Like, shatter this lie. It says in Isaiah, it's a delusion.
Yeah. Right.
It's a city of confusion. They're crazy. It actually says they're crazy with their idols. Mm-hmm. Like, why do we wrestle with giving that up?
Right.
You know, and so I think it exposes our faithlessness, our hopelessness, our functional despair, because our hope states that life with him, you know, that this life is a blink of a life, right? It's a shadow compared to what's coming, or a dimly lit
mirror.
We're
just in the womb.
Right.
We've barely been born. We've barely been conceived. We don't even know what we're going to be. We're going to be alive for billions of years. We have 80 years in this little dark womb forming little fingers and toes. We kind of hear the voice of the Father, you know, but we want to be born. Like, let's get this show on the road.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? Like, we don't want to stay in the womb.
Right.
That's great imagery. But I think that's at the crux of fear of death. At the crux of our own earthly ambitions, is we may not really believe
right.
it.
Right. Exactly. You know? I don't.
You know, like it could it be that we are not actually connected to our hope when we make our hope about what this life should look and ought to look like?
Right.
And I know that creates all kinds of ethical dilemmas and questions related to how do we engage with justice in society and how do we vote and, you know, how do we live? What about moral structures? And I get that. This is what's so complicated about it. But I love what you're doing because you're confronting us with hope.
Yes.
You know,
true hope.
True hope is confrontational.
Because all that stuff matters. The way we vote, every cup of water matters. Actually, right. Life becomes epic if I know I'm a baby in a womb.
Yeah.
Forming fingers and toes. Those toes are really important. Like I need to work this muscle. You know, I don't want to come out with only 5 fingers. Like I want to be fully formed when I step over that line of death.
Yeah.
So every little thing matters and he sees everything and he's watching it and he's counting it and life becomes epic, but it's not the end.
Right.
It's hardly the beginning.
Wow.
Ooh, you have such a good way of describing it. Like your imagination is so beautiful that I think that's one of the things which we actually need as Christians is the imagination of what the Lord is creating us into.
Yeah.
And we don't have that.
That he's still creating. Like he didn't just create at the beginning and kind of step back after the Big Bang happened.
Right. Like, right. Like, see you later, guys.
He's still creating you.
Yeah.
Right. Oh. No, and I love how you I love how you say it because I've been reading this book called The Prophetic Imagination, right? From Anyway, I'm not recommending it. It's not bad, but it's just not super inspiring. Walter Brueggemann talks about prophets and stuff. But the point is that there is this, as we talk about our hope, it does provoke us to use these faculties he's given us to dream,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
to imagine.
Right.
You know, in this dimly lit life where we see so dark, you know, it's so hard to see even the clearest of the prophets. They only prophesy in part because they only see in part. You know, there's coming a day when we leave the womb and are born into our eternal existence,
yeah.
when our eyes will be opened. And in that day, we shall see him.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
We will be made like him.
Yeah.
I mean, the consummate hope is that it's not over.
It's not over. And we will be so glad that we gave that cup of cold water. That we did the little things, we took care of children, that we taught the classes, that we did whatever it is that we're doing. The wisdom will be justified. This is hope.
Come on.
This.
That's so
good. You're a great songwriter, it's clear. I mean, you end with these beautiful punchlines.
Right?
It's like, oh, Misty, it's truly an honor to have you. I mean, we've been friends for a while, but it's great to engage in this conversation here. To discuss this because, you know, as we're nearing the end of this first season of the CBETS podcast, I think we have one more episode. This is episode 79. The next one will be 80. You know, these past 79 episodes, we've been kind of scraping at the mystery and we're trying to like, okay, let's not get it all mystical and magical and up here knowledge. Like, how does this apply to all the Amazon boxes showing up to my front door, you know? How does this apply to my life today? Like, do I get pet insurance? You know, we have a very different everyday. Yeah, but
just in case you're wondering. No.
But the point is that so often we disconnect the biblical truth from our daily life.
Yeah.
And our desire has been to let's connect the dots. Yeah, this speaks to our lives today, to everything. Whether you're an accountant in England, a lawyer in New York, or a soccer mom in Portland, we have the same hope mm-hmm. that leads us to a kind of joy and peace that is beyond understanding. So
that's
it's been great having you we climax with this first season.
It's a good conversation.
Seriously. And if you haven't seen or listened to our previous podcasts, you can find them on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on YouTube, any outlet that you have for podcasts, you will find us. And we look forward to seeing you next Friday, 2 p.m. Central Time.
Peace.